You're listening to KHNS, Haines, Skagway, Klukwan.
The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lynn Cannell Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee.
Talk Around Town is supported in part by Community Waste Solutions, offering comprehensive refuse services for the community of Haines, with curbside pickup to South Hall, composting to recycling, C&D disposal to septic and porta potty services. Community Waste Solutions at the end of FAA Road in Haines, open 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday.
And welcome to Talk Around Town. I'm Deborah Schnabel, your guide through today's talk about things that matter. Stay tuned for our current news analysis with Tom Morfitt. And our talking topic today is election reform. Can we improve on democracy? Margaret Friedenauer will talk with me, with Tom Morfitt, and Haynesboro Mayor Stephanie Scott on this subject. We'll also check in with the Summer Youth Conservatory. And hey, who are you? Introduces us to another community member. Stay tuned. This is Talk Around Town. And a good morning to you, Mr. Tom Morfitt. How are you?
Good.
Good.
The sun is shining.
All right. That's what it takes.
Nice in paradise today.
Oh, excellent. What's new?
Well, before I start into the news, I just want to note for our listeners that we are about now, actually next week, I guess.
Now,
or next week.
Boy.
we will be starting into our six-week – oh, before the radio, your next radio show, we'll be starting into our six-week summer madness here in Haines.
What does that mean?
And I call this the six-week summer madness because we have our three – from the middle of June, from June 15th to July 30th, we have our three biggest weekends. We have the bike race weekend, 4th of July, and the Southeast State Fair on the course of 6 weeks. We have the kids – theater camp. We have the KHNS radio marathon. We have the hazardous waste collection, the e-waste. We have a ton of weddings. People come. It's the best summer. It's the best weather of the year. It's madness, and we scrunch it into these 6 weeks. I think it's ridiculous, but it's kind of the way our town has evolved.
Would you like the bike race in November?
Well, yeah, there's reasons that all this happens in these 6 weeks. But, I mean,
Those people could get married in the winter.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess the big thing that changed here over time was we pushed the fair into July, which used to be held later in August, mm-hmm, second mm-hmm, or third mm-hmm, week in August. Mm-hmm. But other things have sprung up that we've stuck into the 6 weeks because everybody's here those 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So we like to say, well, there's a year-round town and people live here year-round. But I think often the effect is we're a summer town.
This is something that you have pointed out several times. Mm-hmm. There are other things to do, though, in the winter. There's a lot of plays and musicals and stuff
yes,
like that.
Those things. But our biggest events, mm-hmm, we cram into these mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In terms of, and we tried, you know, we're out trying to canoe and catch our subsistence fish. And we're also, these are big commercial events for this
right.
community, for the businesses.
Right.
And we also have a tourism industry, which when some of these events started, we didn't really have a tourism industry. So we've really packed these 6 weeks big.
Stephanie is mimicking an eagle. Eagle Festival, I believe.
Oh, in the winter
right,
time.
Which that's is like 100 people.
I know,
people.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Right.
Hardly
right.
compares.
Right. Okay.
So that's my
Well, I'll bet in Minneapolis
I'm...
it's the same way. Everything happens in the summertime.
Well, no,
it's
not,
the
not,
nature
it's,
of it, northern climate,
well, it's not
isn't
that,
it?
It's not just the summer. because the summer goes through August, but we have almost nothing that goes on this town in August, and almost nothing that happens in September. It really doesn't pick back up again until the coho fishing, like in October.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's
berry picking in August.
Our berry picking festival. Gotcha. Okay. It's a pretty big news week this week.
All right.
The borough. It's what's in the paper this week, which I. I guess I
Tom, editor of the paper.
Well, what we put in the paper is what we think is the biggest news. Mm-hmm. Part of it is the crab closure that the borough is seeking, mm-hmm. Emergency closure on commercial crabbing in the area. It's a classic dispute between commercial users and subsistence users. This rift.
I do want to make sure. I would just like to put a little bit of a damper mm-hmm. on this. There has been no decision by the Borough Assembly that's what we'll do. The mayor is going to be writing a letter,
right?
Which we will then discuss and debate.
Right, right. Well, the Assembly has done this before for crabbing areas down Excursion Inlet. Right. The Borough has never followed through on it, and typically the Borough has lost in these cases. Mm-hmm. We would like you not to to create these areas.
You mean they don't pay attention to the borough's request?
Well, you have to go. The way the real politics works is you have to go to the Board of Fish, and the borough has never elected to actually attend and say, we as the community want you to do this. It's a real issue because a lot of people live here for those subsistence activities and mm-hmm. a lot of those – and that's a big part of our lifestyle.
Right.
And we also have commercial crabbers who make a little bit of money in that industry as well. And so it's sensitive. It has to do with everything with being Alaskan.
Mm-hmm.
Fight
over resources.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's a planetary issue. It's global.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's a fascinating issue. And it kind of – one of the things that led to – you know, you might remember I worked in subsistence. It led to this big division we have between a state subsistence program and a federal subsistence
mm-hmm,
program.
Mm-hmm.
And the federal user said, we think the federal government protects our subsistence better than the state of Alaska does.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, another big story that we've been following for months, the dogs being shot by the arrows.
Oh, yes. Well, by a person using arrows.
Yeah,
I mean
– thank you. The state is not going to pursue as a criminal matter the shooting of those dogs.
Because?
The state has to prove malicious intent in its prosecution. And also the state doesn't have much evidence. They have the state has a suspect. The suspect has declined to talk.
Uh-huh.
There's no eyewitnesses. So the state's backing off that. It appears it's going to go to the borough to be prosecuted as a cruelty to animals case with a maximum fine of $300 at the discretion of the court. And so we'll see. Everybody in Haines has a dog, and the idea – and many people let their dogs run, which is not allowed to let your dog run. And as a result, I think a lot of people will watch that case
mm-hmm.
and will be interested to know that.
Windsor's very interested in this case.
So if Windsor comes home with a little boo-boo on him, you may not have recourse is the upshot there. Another interesting case, another interesting story. This week, FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, issued a preliminary permit to THREA, the Clinkett Haida Regional.
Yeah, now clear that up for us, because we had been told earlier that THREA had withdrawn
has said
their
it was not
interest.
Right. And everything changed this week when the federal government said, we're going to give you THREA the permit. Now,
is this like miscommunication? Did they not tell FERC that they wanted to withdraw? And by the time sequence, the permit got issued without them talking?
Well, that we're not sure of
at
this point. But at this point, THREA says what we formally said, we're no longer necessarily saying. So we might just take our permit and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
So completely
a reversal.
Reversal. We thought for sure that this would be going to John Floreski's firm, this work. It was mm-hmm. John's firm and Tlingit Hydro Regional Energy Authority that were competing to develop this hydro plant up there on Walker Lake. And now 3 appears to have the upper hand, even though they
just 2 weeks ago
they'd say we're no longer interested.
Interesting.
Fascinating.
It could be a bureaucratic calendar mishap or something like that too.
Right.
You know.
Another state, court issue. The state has declined to press charges against Fred Einsbrook. He was guest on your show 2 weeks ago.
Discussing
for trespassing. There at Viking Cove,
which he doesn't. He calls it adverse possession.
Prescriptive easement.
A prescriptive easement.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
That civil case is continuing on whether he has that prescriptive right to use that.
So the state has determined that he is not trespassing.
They haven't determined that.
Okay.
They've said they basically wanted a continuation of the case. The judge said, you've had 8 months to get your case together, and you can't get a continuation. The state basically begged off that it was too busy to get its case together.
Okay.
Yeah. So Fred, I think at this point, is kind of enjoying a victory, and we'll see where the civil case goes.
All right. And that's it. All right.
Oh, also we wanted to give a shout-out to the writers' conference happening in Skagway.
Right. It started just today.
No, it's been going on.
Okay.
Yeah. It ends tomorrow, I believe.
And several of the Haynes people are in attendance in Skagway. And I think that there's probably 60 to 80 people in Skagway. I've also heard that it's our Dan Henry, that is pretty much responsible for putting that thing together.
Yeah, and
right?
Buckwheat Donahue, yeah.
And you've told me that Howard Weaver, who was the publisher of the Anchorage Daily News at one time.
Two-time Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yeah.
It's a great credit to Skagway to have some pretty renowned writers statewide who are there. And
I hope you get on a plane and go over,
Tom. I intend to.
Oh, great. Though. Yeah, that would be terrific. And that's about it then.
Yes, except the writers' conference, I think, ended last week, Tom.
Oh, my goodness. We've been talking about this for a while.
It occurred last week. The Northwoods Writers Conference in Skagway was a great success last week in Skagway, from what I understand.
You weren't listening to KHNS News with
Margaret. Proof that too much goes on in the summertime.
I just wanted to clarify that.
So you didn't see Howard Weaver, and apparently you're not going to be able to.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
Never mind. This is too big for me. Let's just close her out.
Okay.
You know someone between the ages of 5 and 18 who loves to play act? Well, they should be attending the Summer Youth Theater Conservatory. We're checking in today with Lynn Canal Community Players Director Annette Smith about this wonderful opportunity for our summer youth. Welcome, Annette.
Thanks, Deborah.
Yeah, so tell us what happens at the Summer Conservatory.
Well, the students go for 5 days, Monday through Friday, for 3 weeks.
For 3 weeks.
From about, 10 or 9:30 to 3 or 3:30. And their big mission is to come up with a play, a full-length play, to be performed on the Chilkat Center stage for the public. Conservatory students go the full time. The playmaking students, ages 5 to 7, they go from just in the mornings.
All right. Now, tell me, I saw the poster for that. What does that mean, playmaking, as opposed to the other stuff?
Well, it's about the same. They're making plays.
Okay.
But they're, you know.
But they're 5 to 7 years old, so they're very short.
And Kathy Pershigian, who's a kindergarten teacher in Juneau, is their director.
Okay.
And she usually comes up with a good short play that's in the same theme as what the big kids are doing. And then the playmaking group puts on a show for their parents and friends ahead of time. And then the playmaking kids are also incorporated at the end into the main play.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So so they could be doing anything. This year, the play is going to be Aladdin and the Magic Lamp.
Nice.
Yes. Won't that be fun?
I think so.
And there's opportunity for the villain to be very villainous and for the princess to be so lovely. And there's a couple of genies, you know, and genies are fun. And then there's a dragon. There's a monkey involved. So I think there'll be a lot of fun parts that the kids can really get into the characterization of.
This has been a very successful program. I mean, the fact that you have it every year, I presume, attests to that. About how many people usually attend? How many?
Well, we usually have between 20 and 30 students involved.
And who will, aside from Kathy, who takes care of the younger ones, how much staff and who? Do you know the staff yet for the older part?
Yes, the director is going to be a new lady, Michelle Reinhart.
Okay.
And she comes from Chino, California, and she has a long list of plays to her credit with both children and adults. She's involved in the local theater group there, and she works with the school. So the one she's working on right now is Seussical the Musical, which really sparks my imagination. Dr. Seuss, wouldn't that be fun? Great costumes, great parts. And she's coming, and this will be her first year. To help her will be Tia Haywood.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Who is a graduate of the conservatory.
Right,
for many
a graduate
years, right?
of the conservatory, and she's helped us out in the past. And then, of course, the DDF, the debate, drama, and forensics group at the school, really benefits from our summer youth theater conservatory graduates. I remember when Dan Henry had it, he said, oh, my goodness, what a big difference in the kids coming into the DDF program who have been in the summer youth conservatory. And then to help Kathy Pershigian will be Jasmine Taylor. Taylor will be helping her, and she'll also help with the big kids too in the afternoon.
So people that are interested in, I mean, you don't necessarily have to be interested in being on the stage, but if you are interested in being a set person, like making sets or lighting, or that is that all part of it also? The kids do everything, right?
It is part of it, and I think that if someone. And in the past, this has happened, too. If someone really doesn't want to be on stage, there's plenty to do backstage. And so they will learn about set making and sound and lights, and as well as the acting. And when you have to get up there and project your voice and enunciate clearly and give out a characterization and move around on the stage, these are all skills that are going to help you later in whatever you do. You know, it's just a very good, fun way of learning skills.
Building life skills, right. Now, the registration is open right now, and you have a pre-registration, which closes, I think, tomorrow. And the registration, the fee is $275, but you have announced that there are discounts available. How do people qualify for discounts if they can't afford the $275?
Well, it's $275 if you register past the June 8th discount deadline.
Okay.
Okay, so you get, it's $250. You get a $25 discount if you register before June 8th.
Which is
Coming right up, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
And the same with the playmaking. It's $175 if you register up until the last minute, which is fine. You can register up until the day of, but it's $175 and $150 if you make it by the pre-registration deadline.
Well, it sounds like an absolutely fabulous way to spend the month of July. It's July 1 with the production on July 19th. So if you're between the ages of, or if you know someone or your children ages 5 and 18, you should probably try to register before the 8th. Now, there's two or three ways to register. One is directly with you. You want to give your phone number, or how do people register?
Yeah, well, I prefer to get the paperwork. It's a whole lot easier if I get the paperwork. And the registration forms are available at the Babbling Book downtown on Main Street, and also online if you go to chilcatcenter.org/partners. Or if you just get ORG and find your way to the partner page.
I did go there last night. It's easy to get there.
You can download the registration form and send it in with your check. If you call me, I will make every effort to get you a registration form.
But you can pick them up at the Babbling Book on Main Street.
Yeah, and that's the
easiest. Now, Annette, tell me, have people come from other communities for this? Is there any kind of provision for, like, sending your kid to Haines? I mean, is there a way Skagway kids could participate?
Yes. In fact, I've already got somebody registered from Skagway.
And how are they managing that?
Well, they're going to come over on the fast ferry
every day.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
So and there, I had I think 3 calls from Skagway. So you up in Skagway could probably all pool your resources there and get your children over on the fast ferry. Once they get to know them there, they'll know their way around.
Right.
The theater is just up the street from the dock, so nobody's going to get lost.
Right.
And it's a pleasant way. They bring their lunch, and then so they're supervised all through lunch, but they usually go outside, in the parade ground or wherever, and have a pretty fun time doing that.
Right.
And we have had students from Juneau as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one couple has comes every summer from the Lower 48, and they're registering their son in the program the last couple of years, and I think this year too.
Terrific. Well, it's a fantastic program, and I'm just so pleased that the Lincoln Out Community Players is doing it, having a conservatory in Haines.
Well,
that's great.
We always look forward to the play too, because the kids do such a good job. I mean, imagine putting together a full length play in 3 weeks, and they do it. Those clever kids, and they're great. They're great. They're right with the program.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Annette, for checking in with us today.
Thank you.
And hopefully that you will get on the phone or get on the internet right now to chilcatcenter.org and find your registration form and sign up for the conservatory. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we've changed host seats here for this next segment. This is Margaret, and right now we're going to be talking about something before the Haines Assembly. Well, the Hainesboro Assembly is considering an ordinance which would change what our ballots look like for assembly and school board candidates. Currently, Haynes candidates run for a seat. Haynes candidates for assembly and school board. There's no political or area affiliation with any of the seats, but candidates have to choose which seat they want to run for and then are essentially only running against whomever else runs for that seat. So the ordinance under consideration would change that process, so the assembly and school board candidates run as one field. The top vote-getters out of the entire list of candidates would then get the open seats. Some have said this process would allow candidates to vie for an office instead of vying for a seat, as they do now. There's a little bit of criticism out there about this. Some people are not quite so sure about this. So today we have Haynesboro Mayor Stephanie Scott. We have Deborah Schnabel as a guest because she is someone who helped bring this ordinance forward. And we kept Tom Morfitt with us for a little institutional knowledge on some of the history of this. I was going to ask the background on this, how we inherited this process. I'm not sure how we want to do this. The mayor is brought some props with her. I guess I'll ask her, can we talk about the background first, Mayor Stephanie?
We can, but I did bring some friends with me today to help me illustrate this change.
And you want to introduce them?
And I do.
Okay.
We have candidates. We have candidates for two seats for the Animal Town election. And we have seat A and seat B. On the floor in the studio is a very large hula hoop, and that hula hoop represents the Haynesboro.
Okay.
Because we all are one. Everybody in the borough, no matter where you live, whether it's Excursion Inlet or Mosquito Lake or in the town site, votes for everybody.
Okay.
Okay.
But so that's to illustrate seats. That. Okay.
That's right. That's what that hoop. We are a single district.
But if we go to the background of how we got to where we are now, Tom is jumping at this. Tom, I mean,
well, we all kind of know.
Yeah,
let me set up the election for you first.
Wait. Let's do background first, Stephanie.
Right.
If you don't mind, Mayor,
I
would like to say this is, because it does come from this idea of consolidation. I don't want to spend too much time on the consolidation, but Tom,
set the
scene for us for the animal election.
The Haynesboro has been here for 30 years. Before consolidation, we had a districted assembly. We had a highway district. We had a district that was a ring around the city, and those people from those – only those people from those areas could run for those seats. You had to be a representative of those areas.
Right. There would be a little hula hoop inside the big hula hoop.
Right. And the way that worked was when we went to have – went to put our city and our borough governments together, we had a districted borough. We had a city that was at large. Anybody from the city could run for their city seat. When we went to put our two governments together, we said, because we no longer have inside the city seats and outside the city seats, let's just have all the seats at large. You could be from anywhere and just run for the assembly. And people who are resistant to that idea of all running at large said, we want to keep seats. We want to keep a seat
districts.
That's called our districts that weren't geographic, that only existed in name. We would like to have a seat called seat A. And a seat called seat B, and then you would have to run for seat A or seat B, even though that seat,
right.
A or B, no longer pertained to a geographic area.
They just wanted that sort of carryover from
They wanted okay. that carryover.
Okay.
People were not willing to go strictly to this, because this way of electing people without designated seats was discussed at consolidation. People said, no, we want to keep our little seats, even though they no longer represented a geographic district.
And then voters voted for that charter that included
exactly.
keeping the seats.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
So that's the background.
I disagree.
Oh, you disagree.
Absolutely.
No, Deborah is
no.
correct.
It was agreed that we would not have districts, and there was no discussion about whether or not seats were going to be named, except for one acknowledgement that in the initial election, the code and the charter both say, in the initial election for the purpose of getting seats staggered, there shall be seats A and D will be 1-year terms and seats B and E will be 2-year terms and C and F will be 3-year terms. In the initial election.
I respectfully disagree. I was there for the discussion during consolidation.
Oh, okay.
Jerry Lapp, you could call it Jerry Lapp. There were people that fought to keep the designated
seats.
That's
right, Tom. But unfortunately, the way the charter got written, It's not in the charter. So it is as Deborah describes it in the charter. And we don't really have to argue about that.
Right. I was just going to say, let me
can go to the document.
Let me say this. Okay. And I'm coming from somebody, I'm the host, so I'm going to.
Absolutely.
I moved here 2 years ago. I don't care how this system came about. Right now we're talking about changing the system.
Exactly.
I did want to visit it because it is a system that we inherited that people are used to. And we're talking about a shakeup. And that always gets people curious, a little awkward, mm-hmm. a little curious about why we have to change it. So let's go to the part where we're talking about why are we changing it now?
Okay.
Who wants
I'll
to
that.
Discuss that?
Can you do that, Tom?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Mayor, we are getting
why am I here?
No. We are getting to you, Mayor Scott. I promise. Okay, so we're gonna give Tom a few more minutes to say why we're going now. Is that you're gonna talk about why we're changing it now?
The point was raised at the assembly level a few years ago put on the list.
Deborah, I'd like you to speak to that.
Thank you, because I did attend as a borough, as an assembly member elected in 2010. We had a strategic planning session in February of 2011, wherein the assembly at that time discussed the difficulties that we have with our elections because we require seat selection.
Okay.
Many people don't want to run because they don't really want to voice that they are opposed to somebody else. In other words, some people don't want to run against somebody. So we believed at the time that by having no seats, more people would be encouraged to put their name up for a candidacy.
Can I just say that you just described this situation from the candidate's point of view. Now if you describe it from the voter's point of view.
Thank you.
Yeah.
From the voter's point of view, the fact that we have seat selection or seat designation basically introduces a first level choice, not by the voters, but by the candidates themselves. So that when I, as a voter, face a ballot, mm-hmm. I am told I cannot have candidate B and candidate D simultaneously because by the nature of the ballot, that decision has already been made for me that I cannot have the choice of those two people that
are because they're running against each other.
Different seats because they're in different seats.
Understood. So that's the voter's point of view. Now, Mayor Scott.
Well, I think that I understand that radio is a word medium, but I think that this this situation is easier to understand if you actually experience it.
So I have brought you
an election, and we have the Haines, we have Animaltown, which is represented by the hoop, and it is a single district, multi-member situation, and that is what the Haines Borough is. We are a single voting district, and we represent more than one member. We elect more than one member, whether it's for the school board or whether it's for the borough assembly. So in front of you, and people at home can do this, just whip out a piece of paper and write down seat B. And for seat B, you have two candidates, Rhonda Raven and Marianne Muskox. And for seat A, you have Glenn Goat and is it Max Moose? Max Moose. Okay, now I just ask you to vote your ballot right now. What are your choices? You have to choose between Glenn Goat and Max Moose for seat A, and for seat B, you have to choose between Marianne Muskox and Rhonda Raven. You don't have to reveal your choice, but you just have to feel what that's like. Okay, switch to the proposed alternative, which happens to be how people vote in Craig and the city of Ketchikan and the Ketchikan Gateway Borough and Juneau, many, many municipalities in Southeast Alaska. Now, I'm going to take away the seats.
So you're taking away the – okay.
All right.
Oh, the little piece of paper that says what seat they're running
for. The designation.
The designation.
And now, let me hand you a different ballot. And,
which she's doing right now in the studio. Which this is going to be what the ballot would look like if this goes forward, I take it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can imagine
a slate of candidates.
That you can imagine what it is, and I don't know why. This always bothered me when I was teaching too. I always lost my handout.
Too many handouts.
Well, basically, we'd see all four of the candidates in a list.
Exactly.
Is that correct?
Here, I'll give one to Tom and one to you, Deborah.
Okay.
And you're left out.
That's okay.
Oh no, you're.
Are there spaces for writing candidates still under this system?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely, always. Now look at your ballot. What are your? How many choices do you have now?
Four.
You have five.
Actually,
well, five, I guess.
Five or six.
For writing.
You have six, because
right.
You can write in two.
That's exactly right.
You can only write in two.
It says vote for two. So
oh,
you don't
because
have to vote for any of the named candidates. You could vote for John Hagen and Margaret Friedenauer.
There's two seats open, so you vote for two of these. And okay. So,
including your write-in.
Can
okay.
I? Yeah.
There you go. So you have more choice.
Right. You're still only casting two votes, but you're choosing among four.
Exactly. So in your previous
all
ballot,
four.
You were forced to choose between Max Moose and Glenn Goat. You had to choose one of those. And you were forced to choose between Marianne Muskox and Rhonda Raven. Now you can choose Max, Glenn, Marianne, or Rhonda regardless.
And so you're not – when you have a choice of two candidates and under the previous system, when you have a choice of two candidates running for a single seat, you can't vote for both of them.
That's exactly right. When you look at your ballot with all your choices on it, you know, just think about how that feels. Do you feel that you have more choice as a voter? I don't know. You know,
well, I mean, I think that's a good point, but this slate version has brought up the idea of now people need 40% to come out of this a winner. Glenn Goat needs 40% to come out as a winner over Max Moose and the other candidates for the two seats. So are there going to be more runoffs? Is runoff going to be a problem in this kind of ballot?
Historically, it's not been a problem, mm-hmm. and we can still have the same. In the seat version, there is no limit to the number of candidates who can run for any one seat. I didn't want to sort of prejudice your point of view, but an alternative ballot is this. Rhonda Raven comes in and sees that, Marianne Muskox is running and doesn't want to run against Marianne Muskox. And somehow or another, the candidates sort themselves out so that you only have Rhonda Raven running unopposed and you have Marianne Muskox and Glenn Goat and Max Moose all running for the same seat. And that has happened, too, in Haynesboro. And so you have basically no choice for one seat and three choices for another seat.
Someone pointed out, hey, Deborah, this is why I had a question for you. As a person in here who's run for office, Stephanie ran for mayor. You ran for assembly. You've run for assembly a few times. When you had to go in and decide, I want to run this year. I want to run for assembly. Mm-hmm. Can you, I mean, you don't have to reveal the person. You don't have to get personal about
you
it.
Don't
but
know.
I want to know how you decided to go in and decide what seat to file for right under this system that we have now.
Well, I recall very clearly that I did not claim a seat that I was running for in the entire time that I went through the nominating petition.
Okay, so
process.
You don't have to name it right now.
You're supposed to.
But you
but
didn't.
I did not.
Okay.
Because we have a nonpartisan election where we don't have parties. There's no machine out there that's deciding who my opponent's going to be.
No Democrats or Republicans, right. Theoretically.
Theoretically, that's correct. So the field is wide open. And I think that what happens colloquially in every community, and I've talked to many of the election clerks in Southeast Alaska, they all of them who have, and it's only Wrangell and Haynes and Skagway. Did you call Skagway, by the way?
I called Skagway.
Okay,
yes.
So we can talk about that. In those communities where there are designated seats, there's really no basis for the designated seats because every community says it's a nonpartisan election, which
right.
means there's no parties. Nonetheless, there's this holdover from something where there, I think it's from the staggered seat, the initial contest. So the people tend to socially get together, you talk in the restaurants, you talk in the bars, you find out from your friends, you go to, you know, you respond to somebody who's pretty political and likes to get things organized, and you go to someone's house and you talk around about who, do you know who's running? There's all of this maneuvering to try to facilitate a ballot that produces two opponents for each seat. That has happened only in the last 2 years consistently. Prior to that time, and I did go back to 2003, from 2003 until 2012, the only time, only years that we have had two candidates for each seat was in 2008, 2010, excuse me, 11, and through 2012.
And the school board has had a situation where there have been no candidates.
That's correct. And they oftentimes have. 1 year, the Hainesboro, this was early on, I think it was in 2004 or 2005, we had six people running for one seat and one person running unopposed.
And ostensibly what's happened there is if a very strong candidate files for a seat, nobody wants to run against them. And if there is not, if there is an apparent weak candidate seeking the other seat, say an election in which only two seats are open, all the other candidates will file for that other seat rather than choose to run against a very strong candidate. So the system right now is game to a lot of jockeying in which I agree with Deborah and Stephanie, in which the choice for the voters is already made before they step into the
it's
ballot box.
It's made by the candidates.
It's made by the candidates. And that's a process that's not seen. And
yeah,
but you and I, we don't get to go to the borough office and say, who's going to, you know,
right.
Who's jockeying, who's
but
talking to
whom. But I also want
to
speak to the people who are not engaged in that also. I don't think that everybody doesn't want to run against somebody. I think some people really are not that tuned in, and they just say, oh, do I have to file for a seat? And they file with unwittingly
mm-hmm.
or unknowingly.
Sure.
There's some of that,
yeah,
too.
Sure.
Some people
yeah.
just say, I'm going to run.
Right.
And they go and they say, well, what seat is available?
Well,
and they just choose one. And without paying any attention to anyone else, they file.
Well, I will be a devil's advocate in that I see a little bit of a confusion when some of these ideas brought – I mean, now some of the people who – aren't so, you know, warm to this idea are like, what's wrong with the process now? That's one argument. Is there anything wrong with the process now? Has anybody actually complained except candidates who actually have to run? Have any voters actually complained?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so that's one issue. My other issue is that some people say, well, people don't like to have to run against somebody. Well, it's an election. If you go to a slate, you're going to have to run against a lot more people
than
you would
for a seat. First of all, let's get rid of the word slate. This is not a slate.
Okay, what is it?
It's a roster.
Because first of all, it's just a list. A slate is a term that describes
a party.
Right.
A party runs a slate.
Okay.
And the thing that we always have to go back to is we are a nonpartisan community.
Well, we're nonpartisan, but there are persuasions.
Margaret,
there's always going to be persuasions in an
election.
And
they can still run, and people still run on the platform, their values, their character.
Okay.
None of that goes away.
Okay, Mayor, what were you going
to
say?
Yeah, I would like to address your question. And I think that it is that a community can create a container that promotes human behaviors that they would like to see. What I would like to see is I would like people to say, I am running for the borough assembly. I am running for that job. I am running for the school board.
Okay.
I'm not running against anybody. I'm running for a job, and it is my job to convince the voters that I can do the job. That should be the nature of our conversation. And by and large, it is. At candidate forums, you know, I don't see people knocking down another candidate, but it's in people's minds. And I want to showcase what people are running for rather than whom they're running against.
Okay. Okay. Tom, you have your hand up.
Yeah. I kind of address something that hasn't been squarely said. I think in the last few elections, we've had for a given seat only two candidates, one who's fairly conservative, the other who's fairly liberal. I mean, on
Of
the persuasion of which you speak.
Yes.
And I think that has given rise to a belief that we do have a partisan system.
Right.
And as a person who has watched local politics for 25 years, conservative and liberal does not work on most of the issues that are addressed.
Right.
Whether we have a good police chief or not, it's not a liberal or conservative issue. How much we should spend on student travel is not a liberal or conservative issue. I think people are watching cable television and getting
here,
the war between the donkey and the elephant and thinking, who's the donkey here in the race and who's the elephant? We don't have liberal and democratic issues in this town liberal and conservative issues in this town.
I want to underline that for a minute, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I'm going to interrupt. I know. Because I remember so clearly being in that candidate forum and Jerry, Ernie, and I were running for the same seat. And Jerry, Ernie, and I basically gave the same answers to every single question that came forward.
Yes.
We did not disagree on anything. And remember the Joanne Waterman, Jim Studley race? That was like, you know, hardly a race. They both agreed on everything.
Everything.
Right.
So in a way, the when you ask the question, what's wrong right now?
Yes, that is an argument among some people. It's not broke. Why should we fix it?
But I think that it is broke, and I'm sorry that you're not hearing that it's broke in the sense that there's a first-line decision that's being made not by the voters but by the candidates themselves in the formation of the ballot, in the design of the ballot.
Here comes the next question then.
Okay.
You're taking – I appreciate that you're advocating for the voter, and it seems like you all have that interest in mind, but this issue doesn't get to be decided by the voters. The voters aren't getting a say in whether they get a new election process. Am I correct?
Because it was decided, it's in the charter.
I understand,
okay.
But can you explain that? I understand that. I'm asking that question. Why isn't this going to the voters, Deborah?
It doesn't need to go to the voters because it was decided in 2002 when the charter was adopted by the electorate. When they voted for that, they decided then at that time there are no districts. Everyone is voting for everyone at large. I honestly believe that we got hung up in just retaining the names of seats because our first election identified seats.
Doesn't it also say that the charter election processes will be decided by the assembly? I'm trying to get to that point. This doesn't go to the voters, I believe, because the charter says the assembly decides election procedures. Right. I'm just trying to put it out there that you know.
Well, then you know the answer.
I do know the answer.
Oh, okay.
I'm eliciting an answer. I'm being.
But I do you have that piece of paper that has the code written on it?
I do not. Mayor.
There's nothing that says this can't go to the voters.
Correct.
You know, we can do an advisory vote or whatever. I know that some people want to have this in place right away.
Is that going to happen, Mayor?
Well, I think we have timelines, but I think it's a good idea, and I think that we should take as much time as we need to understand the idea, and if it's a good idea today, it's going to be a good idea at our next election.
But as it goes right now, the process we're currently in with this ordinance, it's not going to affect the election this year in 2013.
You know, I really don't know. Really can't say for sure whether it will or not at this point in time, because if there happens to be, you know, a groundswell of support and this is what people want to do for this election, you know, we can accelerate the public hearings if we need to in order to meet various timelines. You know, I don't know. We can try our best if there is a groundswell of support.
Okay. We have about a couple minutes left. I do have another question. A few people are saying, especially for the school board elections, that this is going to help bring out more candidates. More candidates are going to be encouraged to, because technically they're volunteers and they get to. Tom.
I actually wrote a story on that last year, and I found and there's some communities that still have designated seats at the assembly level, on the school board level, a more roster system like Deborah's proposing. Mm-hmm. And those communities actually have found there are more candidates for races for office when you offer the seats through a roster system.
Because, I'm a little confused as to why people who want to be on a board, like a school board, yes, they're volunteers, but they do enact, you know, important policy changes, don't fear running against somebody. But I guess if it's been proven that a roster –
It does create, it seems, at least in Southeast Alaska, it seems that it creates more more candidates.
Well, that's good. Any closing, we have just a couple minutes. Any closing thoughts? Deborah first.
11 minutes too, but that's okay.
We want to give Vinca plenty of time.
Yes, we do. I think that our code, as I read it, states that it describes what our ballot is supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. And it says that the office shall be the name of the office that's vacant shall be written at the top, and all of the candidates for that office shall be listed underneath. It doesn't say seat.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It says office.
All right.
And I think that's a distinction that should be very clear for all of us. And it's a big distinction, too. I think that we have mentally confused seats with office. And when you ask the question of why don't the voters have to go, you know, weigh in on this, it's because from reading the code, it states that the ballot shall look a certain way. Mm-hmm. I contend we're not doing what that ballot says we're supposed to be doing right now.
Interesting.
I guess I contend that the people at the time the government was put together, there was this discussion, and there were people who were so attached to their idea of having the seat that they were running for versus
you said that earlier.
One
of the things, and I'm sorry I didn't do the research on this but I'm going to put it out there anyway because somebody might remember it. But Greg Richman reminded me the other day that we had a vote for consolidation, or we had a vote about on the issue of consolidation, and it failed. And then Otis, the mayor of the city of Haines, brought the charter back to the city council. They amended it and put it back out there, and then it passed. And he suspects, our memory is not, you know, it's 10 years old memory.
I know.
But we have to go back and find out, was this the issue that we changed that made it then, what's the word, plausible or acceptable to the voters? Because we did vote consolidation down several times, but we voted it down
There's plenty of us in town.
Do you remember, Stephanie? Because you were there.
I think the change was from unification to consolidation.
There you go.
Oh, okay.
It didn't have anything to do with seats. It had actually something to do with the very structure of the merger, okay. Right.
Any final thoughts, Mayor? You get the last word.
She has all these animals.
Hopefully, we're going to be able to present this concept to the school board on the 13th and, get some feedback. And I think it's just we just need to hear from people, and people need to really think about this. And see what they I really do recommend people construct for themselves a ballot with two seats, four candidates, and vote that ballot, and then reconstruct the ballot where they're faced with just four candidates and two write-ins, and see which one feels like they have more choice.
Okay. Well, thank you all for joining us. We have Mayor Stephanie Scott, Tom Morfitt, Deborah Schnabel talking about this. Let your opinion be known, people, while the Assembly's talking about this. We'll be right back.
And we have in the studio today with Talk Around Town the segment of Hey, Who Are You? And Hey, Who Are You?
I'm Vinca.
Welcome to the show, Vinca. I met you about a month or so ago when I was visiting my mother at Haynes Assisted Living. I had never laid my eyes on you before, and then I found out you've actually lived here for like 15 years. Tell me about yourself.
Well, there isn't too much to tell. We fell in love with Haynes and decided to move up here from the San Francisco Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. How long did you live there?
Oh, I lived there for, 20-some years.
Well, you have an accent, and I would say that you probably didn't live there your whole life. Where'd you get your accent?
I've lived different places, but I was born and raised in Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably have some kind of an accent, too. But some people say I don't have an accent, but I can't hear it myself.
No, I understand that. So what compelled you to leave Denmark?
I guess just getting away from Europe after the war was over was kind of a relief. I came over in 1950, and the war was kind of hard for us. And
did you come by yourself?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. That's a big decision for a young woman.
Yeah, but it really was a wonderful move I made there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, when you're young, you have courage that sometimes is not good, but...
but you were glad. You think in retrospect,
I have never
good
regretted moving over here.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, I've been able to go home and visit with my family and friends now and then, and they've been able to come over here. So it's not as though I cut myself off completely.
Mm-hmm.
And but I really like it over here. It's a good place to be.
So in America, or the United States of America, you have lived in San Francisco and in Haynes. Are those are the two places?
Yes. Before San Francisco, I lived, spent some time in Sacramento,
mm-hmm.
which was too hot for me.
Oh, okay.
The climate is just not my cup of tea there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I got a job in San Francisco. And that really, I liked San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But...
And what was your occupation?
Well, I was a nurse. Mm-hmm. And was able to get work everywhere I went. So I...
People always need help.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had good friends. People were very nice to me everywhere I went, so I can't complain.
And how did you end up in Haynes?
Well, I guess the motorhome is to be blamed for a lot of things. We took a tour, Mike and I, up to... Alaska. It was by plane to Ketchikan and then by boat to various places. And anyway, when we got back home, we decided to get the motor home. And from then on, it was coming up every year, every summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided to settle down up here, buy a home up here, and that's been quite a while now. How long has it been?
7 years.
Well,
Oh, 1970, is that what you said? Uh-huh. So one of the things that distinguished you, other people have told me, that you had, you love dogs, and I know that because when Windsor yes. has an attachment to you. So tell me about your dogs.
Well, they sort of ran my life, I guess.
But what kind of dogs were
I
they?
I had Great Danes.
Oh, I said, I just love the fact that you're Danish and you had Great Danes.
they were just part of our family for so many years. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I married someone who also loved dogs and let me have a Great Dane. And that has been my favorite breed, although I love them all. Mm-hmm. It's just something about the Great Dane that I don't know just what it is.
But are there a lot of Great Danes in Denmark?
Well, not really. The four-legged ones. well, there aren't really that many.
Oh, okay.
But I decided to try to let my liking the dogs do some good while I was here, and I started Haynes Ark up. I just noticed that Haynes could use something. It was like a puppy mill when I got
mm-hmm.
here,
mm-hmm.
and a kitty mill too.
Mm-hmm.
And Haynes Ark has been my...
Wonderful. Thank you very much. I volunteer there on Sunday nights.
Oh, really?
I had no idea that you were a founder of that. Thank you.
Yeah, well, and now that we have Steve Wick there,
mm-hmm.
I think he's really good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to see him there.
Mm-hmm.
So... I wish I could spend more time there myself.
And I wish you could spend more time here on this show, too, Vinca. But, you know, I think our 5 minutes is up.
Okay.
I told you it would be over really fast. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, just that I love Haynes and everybody here.
Oh, thank you very much. We love you, too, Vinca. Thanks. And I've lost my sign-out sheet, but thank you very much for joining us today. That's it for Talk Around Town. I want to thank all of my guests, Mayor Stephanie Scott and Tom Morfitt and Vinca. And Vinca, did she even say her last name? I don't think so. What is your last name, Vinca?
It's Gilman.
Vinca Gilman. Thank you very much. Founder of HARC. Here as our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me. I'm Deborah Schnabel, your host for Talk Around Town. I'll see you in 2 weeks. And you're listening now to KHNS in Haynes, Alaska.